Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Is your excitement about your child's new school year ahead tainted just a bit by the dread over the homework and what for some can be the drudgery of a classroom teaching styles? What's more, funding cuts have pared or eliminated music and the arts from many school offerings, and recess, it's really a mere afterthought these days. Today, we're going to talk about what you can do on the home front to keep the spirit of creativity alive in your child going forward into the school year. Joining us now is Mimi Chenfeld. She's a teacher, writer, poet, and dancer. She's the author of Creative Experiences for Young Children and Teaching in the Key of Life. Mimi has taught in Columbus since 1970. Her specialty, creativity, and fun. In fact, she's known as the Queen of Fun. For that reason alone, she is a frequent guest on All Sides. Welcome back, Mimi.
Thank you, Ann.
And also joining us is local author Michael Rosen. He's just finished his latest book. It's called Sailing the Unknown, Around the World with Captain Cook. A former Thurber House literary director, Michael is the writer, editor, and illustrator of more than 80 books for both children and adults. He's received numerous awards, including the National Jewish Book Award, the Simon Wiesenthal Museum of Tolerance Book Award, and the Ohioana Library Career Citation in Children's Literature. Welcome back, Michael.
Honored as always. Thanks.
And from our listeners, I'd love to hear what your ideas is, how you keep creativity in your child's life throughout the school year. What do you do to make it fun and interesting when maybe they're not getting so much of that in school because the teachers have their own issues they're dealing with? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, when we talk about school and kind of how it can sap some of these creative juices, it sounds like we're being hard on the teachers, and I just wanted to go to that and get your opinions about teachers and what they are trying to do and what they're grappling with. Mimi?
Well, I am like your greatest advocate and supporter of teachers and the challenges in the face of the standards and the testing and the expectations and the pushing. And the great teachers, no matter what, keep the flames alive and glowing. The great teachers find ways within this situation that is so dire for so many of the new teachers or insecure people who are not sure and are trying to meet, you know, all the expectations that are handed down from state, from local, from God, etc. And the great teachers really keep it going, and they stay true to the spirits of the children, and that is something that we need to acknowledge, that there's still wonderful teachers doing this despite all the obstacles. Does that make sense?
That makes sense to me, Michael.
Of course, it makes sense. I see. I was at a school, a wonderful private school, recently doing a 3-day residency, and in the 35 years I've been visiting schools, it was sort of the first time that I recognized that the poles that created that magnetic field that the school was existed in wasn't standards, academic standards on one side, because they didn't have testing, and it wasn't discipline, keeping kids in line, because they didn't have that issue either. It was all about individual excellence for these kids. The level of creativity, the level of engagement for both kids and students both kids and teachers, was so exponential, so synergistic, that you could see everything that was offered a kid was served up and whacked back with so much engagement. In other words, each kid was able to find a way of, yes, addressing those standards, of acknowledging that there were certain benchmarks that needed to be accomplished, but could be done so within the passion or the area of excellence that kid could have fostered in that environment.
We do talk about the cuts, the funding cuts, a lot. And I wonder, though, when you look back on your grade school experience, was it necessarily that creative? Mine wasn't. We had more arts. We had more access to, you know, the tools. But it was very rigid in what we were supposed to do with them. And it seems like teachers nowadays are more open.
Well, I think, you know, just let me go back to Michael for 1 minute, because he's talking about a wonderful opportunity for schools that are not, you know, that private schools, that they're free from many of the constraints that public schools have. And so that's a very big issue, that you have kids who are having these experiences that are open and exploring and adventuresome, and they still meet the standards, they don't have discipline problems, et cetera. But let's think of public schools. There are many public schools where they are keeping, and, you know, I think the society is into this, you know, public school education is yuck, yuck, and let's, you know, really diminish it even more. But, you know, you have some wonderful public schools that are doing many of the things that a lot depends on the culture of the school and the principal and going down the line with staff and everybody on board. I have been to public schools that, I mean, you, as I say, you die and go to heaven to have your kids go, because many of the things that Michael described, many of the qualities are still in those schools. And that's possible. This is going back to the strength of the teachers. Now, going back to your question, I cannot remember whether, I don't think we did have a music teacher. Well, remember, I grew up in New York City in 100 years ago, and they sang a lot of really religious, scary songs. Like, I forgot one of them.
We actually sang Onward Christian Soldiers in grade school at a public school.
We sang, and she had her hair pulled back in a bun. It was almost like a Saturday Night Live skit. Miss O'Neill scared the heck out of everyone and sang scary, scary hymns. Well, that's what we sang. But we had a teacher who did, quote, projects. And that was the greatest thing. We could use, you know, all our ways of, you know, celebrating an idea. We had that's when we had the shoe boxes,
the dioramas.
Oh, sure.
The dioramas.
And then now I'm laughing because, you know, now this is a very big thing in education is projects. I'm like, yo, projects. Hello, it's very old, but it was wonderful, and that was our creativity.
Michael, how did you go to school? What was it like when you went?
I grew up here, so I was definitely a product of Columbus City Schools, and didn't mean it by any means to suggest that private schools have it. That just the preoccupation with both discipline and standards zaps most of the time. As you were saying, it zaps recess and lunch. It zaps kids' ability to have social time. So most of the day, a kid just wanting to say to someone, hey, what are you doing later? Can I show you this? What did you think of that? That's a disruption. Normal socialization. So, I mean, speaking of how I grew up, I remember we had to be quiet during lunch. You had your paper bags that you brought from home, and someone came around all the time saying, be quiet.
That's something out of a Dickens novel.
Right, because we would wake up the sandwiches, don't crunch your carrots loud. School, other classes weren't in session. It's just the premise that, well, if you let them start talking, who knows what's going to happen? It'll all mushroom into this chaos.
It's funny you bring that up because I can very distinctly remember in grade school talking politics at the lunch table.
Oh.
Very distinctly. We'd sit and argue, and whoever our parents were for, we were for. You know how kids are. But
that's great.
If you couldn't, you know, we did have discussions that were outside the realm of what was being taught in the classroom.
That's part of the danger of letting kids talk. Well, you got to be careful.
No, that's part of how your individuality was able to express itself then. There was a forum for that. There was play. There was time allotted for that. Now, I think it's not an exaggeration that we've so compacted and so directed each moment of a kid's time that parents are right to say, gee, my kid needs to learn in a different way. We never had different way options growing up. Of course, you took the test the way the test was given, and your marks reflected that. I'm not suggesting one or the other is the right thing. It's just there needs to be some kind of a balance between recognizing what your kid's aptitudes and skills are, honoring them, encouraging them, and also accommodating the fact that, well, the world mostly doesn't accommodate. And you need to learn some strategies to help you survive in this way, too.
You know, this goes back to the culture of the school. And what Michael's describing about the no speaking during lunch, that's the culture of that school. I'm thinking of Indianola Arts School here and my friend Marlene Robbins, who teaches dance there for 20 years or more. And she does lunch. And they are playing music through lunch. And if they finish their food and they, you know, they don't, you know, drop it on the floor, et cetera, they can dance. And so every single day, the kids are loving lunch. You know, they love lunch because they're having fun music and it's a fun time. So it doesn't have to be that way. That's that particular. Then, you know, I was invited to do a big conference at a school. It was held at the school, but it was kind of for the district. But that particular school had the same principle that Michael described, that no speaking during lunch. So during this teacher part, the kids weren't there. It was all the teachers, and they were having lunch, and I just couldn't help it, you know. So I clicked. I said, "Excuse me, there will be no talking during lunch now because that is against our rules." And it was like, "Whoa!" Everyone just freaked out, and it was like, "What's wrong? This is what you do every day in this school." And, you know, when you really realize that, how do we teach kids to be social? How do we teach kids to talk to each other, as Michael says, or exchange ideas or welcome each other into another experience that they're having? This is what I'm doing. This is what you're doing, or politics or whatever. If there's silence, so when the teachers felt it themselves, it was, I mean, I went out on a limb to do it, but I think it was a good limb. I did fall off the tree. But.
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it often is the necessity for kids to do two things: have an answer, get it done, you know, just something, be called on, have that thing ready to go, and then, whew, I finished it, I'm done. Because we reward them for that, we call on them, we, you know, they at least have something there. And that whole process in the middle, how do you take your idea and move toward the finish? Where do you explore? What do you discover? What do you learn? Where's your confidence that says, hey, you know what? I don't know, and I'm going to find out. This is how I'm going to find out, through this process of writing. And so there's that restoration of creativity, and there's that diminishment of it, because we are so preoccupied in encouraging kids, if you can just get it right and get it done, that's all that matters.
And saying to them before they even sit down, or what do you want to say? Think about what you want to say first. And then sometimes just sit down and say it.
Sometimes you don't know what you're going to say. And part of the excitement is to begin with, as Michael says, the question. Begin with the wonder. You know, who is it who said all learning begins with wonder?
I don't know.
Who was that quote?
Author, yeah.
Did I just say
somebody
that?
Somebody was right. Maybe you. No. My guests are Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. She's author and educator. Also Michael Rosen, writer, editor, illustrator galore. If
genius,
you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking about creativity. Looking forward to a brand new school year. If you have some ideas about any of this, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I don't want to structure it too much.
Right.
You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Now the presidential campaign really begins. Mitt Romney kicked off things on Saturday with the big announcement.
The next vice president of the United States, Paul Ryan.
I'm Lynn Neary. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us, plus the $6 billion campaign. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 75 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high right around 82. Clear skies tonight, a low of 61 degrees. Sunshine on Thursday and a high near 90. There's a chance of rain Thursday night, rain's likely, a low of 67.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, wrapping up the seventh season of Jazz Zoo with That's Entertainment, Byron's Birthday Bash, featuring Tonight Show legend Pete Barbuti and other musical guests, Friday the 17th at the Zoo, jazzartsgroup.org.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
School is right around the corner, and if you're sort of dreading it a little bit for your kids, for yourself, you're not alone. A lot of people do. It should be an exciting time, you know, new leather shoes and, you know, all of that, chalkboards and, no, all of that's gone, right? But if you're worried about it and you're wondering how you can keep the creativity in your child's life through school and with their teachers, give us a call, 614-292-8513. My guests are Michael Rosen, writer, editor, illustrator. His newest book, beautiful book, it's called Sailing the Unknown, Around the World with Captain Cook. It's illustrated by an Italian artist. Her name is Maria Cristina Pitelli. Also with us, Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld, author and educator and queen of fun. Once again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
Mimi and Michael. Tony in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Hello there. Hi, Deb. How are you doing?
Is this my dancing Tony?
It is.
I think so. He's.
Yeah. Hi, Tony.
How are you doing?
Great.
Well, I'm with two great people.
Well, I hear that.
And first of all, it's Plato and Aristotle that said all learning and knowledge begins with wonder.
Oh, so it's been around a while then, huh?
You mean it wasn't me? Oh, shoot.
Well, all great minds take a life there in that regard. But I'm really interested in this because I've only had a few experiences teaching. I was a substitute teacher, and I had this great experience where these kids had these emotional barriers. They were considered what do you call it, developmentally challenged, developmentally disabled. They were whatever they called them 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they were fantastic. And we started talking about history and how you learn history. And I was a history major. So I asked them, well, how do we know anything that happened in history? And they started telling me about all the sources you'd use, logbooks and archives, and what would you do to find out what somebody did on a certain date? Well, I'd ask somebody. I'd tease it out. I'd go look it up. And these were the kids that were shunted off to the side and treated like they were, you know, had no ability to do anything. So you're talking about putting constraints on them and putting limits that are artificial. And here's some people that supposedly had those, and I don't know where they were. So.
Hey, Tony, what were you teaching them?
Well, it was just, I was a substitute, so okay. I just got there and they told me, well, you just babysit them.
Oh.
And I said, well, no, there's got to be something to do. And they said, well, you know, okay, well, talk to them about something. Okay, well, that's very nonspecific. Thank you for the help.
But it let you be creative.
Well, I had to do something because I walked in there and they gave me the impression that I was going to walk in and everyone was just going to be blankly staring at the wall. And no, they said, well, what are we going to do today? Well, that's a good question. What do you want to do today? I don't know what we're supposed to do today. So we were all sort of in the same boat. And, you know, I didn't know what I was supposed to do. So I didn't know there were any rules. So we just went ahead and had a free-for-all discussion because I knew history. So that's what we talked about. How do you know anything? How do you find out? Because we started talking about Columbus, for instance. And one of them actually said, well, how do we know any of this happened?
Great question.
That's a really good question. How do you know? You know, because we said so, and we're the big people. So write it down and go stare at the wall. You know, it's just that sort of thing came to mind as y'all were talking. And plus, I love him, and so I had to say hello and support what he does.
Tony, so. You know what? You brought up something I just want to say, and probably you know this now, but teachers of special ed really, or whatever they call it now, really have a lot more freedom than most of the teachers in standard classrooms because of the very thing you mentioned. They have more options to do creative things with the children.
Because less is expected
right,
of them
exactly.
In a way. They're not expected to take the tests
exactly.
And that kind of thing, right?
Exactly. So in a way, what you did was really give them a gift that day. And that would have been so great for them to have you as a regular teacher because of the whole way you honored and respected them and shared with them.
Michael's speech.
Yeah, no. There are just so many different topics that are when you begin talking about differently abled kids and ways that you need to acknowledge and tailor what outcomes you're looking for. What I most appreciated was that Tony recognized that his particular passion or his area of interest being history had an application that needn't be academic or lofty, but could immediately entice this group of kids.
Engage them. They were engaged immediately.
And on a level that was meaningful to them, too.
I thought it's interesting the words you used, honored. He honored them.
Right, exactly. And also the fact that he was honest and shared himself and said, what are we going to do? I'm with you. We're in this together. I love that. That was beautiful.
Tony?
Well, yeah. So, well, it's this thing you hear about, if you remember when you were back when you were very young and you didn't know any better and you didn't know what you could or could not do. And frequently it's a case that you can do something until somebody tells you you're not supposed to be able to do it.
Sometimes those are the best things you do.
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, well, I didn't know I wasn't able to do it, so I just went and did it.
Right.
And I ended up spending several weeks with that class. The teacher was unfortunately out for a long time. And it was a great experience. And I still, to this day, don't know what I was doing. I couldn't tell you how to do it. It was, you know, they were great. And they were a handful. They were difficult mm-hmm. at times. And they needed boundaries and rules, and like we all do. But they didn't. They were treated like they were just, well, this is a sideshow. This is a, it's a storage room. That's what it was. It was a storage room. Hmm. And I wonder how many groups in a school are sort of put in a storage room and treated that way. Or maybe that's the way we do it all the way around. I don't know what happens now.
Hope not.
I'm an old man now, so I don't know what
happens. Well, things might have changed. That's good news. Tony, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Tony.
So
take
Thank
care.
Thank you, ma'am.
Bye,
Have
sweetie.
A good one. Love you. Bye.
Me too.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about creativity. How do you keep it in a child? How do you keep it in yourself? You give us a call and share that. You can also go onto the Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Michael Rosen, were you going to say something?
No, it was interesting when Tony was talking about history and Columbus and how do we know that, and the fact that you just referenced Sailing the Unknown, this picture book.
Yeah, tell us about the book.
Well, I mean, not to tout the book as
no,
much
it,
as to it, say...
it speaks right to what he was saying, though.
One of the real challenges that I had for this particular book was, here's the artwork. You're going to tell the story of James Cook's travels aboard the Endeavour in the 18th century, the discovery of that unknown land, Australia, Cape Horn, so on and so forth. And I had to figure out how, as a kid who's 8 or 12, going to understand what would it be like to be on a boat for 1,056 days, to be an 11-year-old amid the company of 20 and 30-year-olds, no friends, a goat for your companion. Literally, we know two things about this kid
This is a real kid.
A real kid named Nicholas Young, 11 years old, and we know he had the ship's goat and that he was, a delinquent of some sort that was sent aboard ship to become a man. And so, yes, I read James Cook's journals, the botanist's journals, other artifacts, and so forth. But still, I could imagine this reader trying to say, yeah, so what was that like? So how do you get the wonder about a world that was as foreign as Mars to us now? You know, like in the 18th century, Earth was a foreign land. It was uncharted. Can you imagine? So I tried to come up with ways to let a reader know you're meeting people who don't speak your language, don't look like you, and you haven't read about other cultures. There wasn't a book or a Wikipedia entry on what the natives of Tahiti, what their customs are, what they speak like. I tried to come up with these things. They encountered hundreds of new species never seen and never named. So I was trying to figure out, how do you get the wonder so that when someone says to you, we saw a giant mouse, that could mean kangaroo. So they'd never seen
it. Because they didn't even have words for it.
And of course, the people on board ship were naming things for the first time. They were doing taxonomy. And so it just is some fun things for kids, for teachers, as a kind of promotional thing for this book. I've been trying to say, okay, find something in a picture, in a encyclopedia that you don't know, and come up with a name for it based on just what you observe there. Or go talk to someone that you don't know. Pick a partner, don't talk, and invite him to come over for a snack after school.
How do you
no
do
words.
It?
How do you communicate this? You know, and without writing, without speaking.
The point being that they met people that they had no reference point
and
for,
they needed to communicate with. Mm-hmm.
So trying to do this journey, I wrote a journal based on what I thought a kid would see and perceive, in hopes that readers too would find themselves in that same awe and mystery about their own lives. I mean, we're all discoverers. You know, Kathy Sullivan, who was our wonderful shuttle director of COSI, shuttle astronaut and director of COSI for many years. One of her platforms, now that she's at the NOAA, I know she has a chance to speak on this, is that we are all discoverers. She has been an explorer on grander stages, the bottom of the ocean, you know, out in space. But all of us have that same capacity and ability to be
to
involved.
Wonder.
Yeah, in our words, in the quest for discovery and wonder.
Listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about creativity with Michael Rosen, writer, editor, illustrator. Michael was just talking about his new book. It's called Sailing the Unknown, Around the World with Captain Cook. Also with us, Mimi Chenfeld. She's author, educator, queen of fun. 614-292-8513 is the number to call.
You know, Ann, you asked a question, and then Michael was beautiful describing the process. Because it's an example of a way of thinking, and that's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about a formula, and we're not talking about a strategy. It's built into the human spirit. It's built into our legacy as human beings that we have this ability, every single person. And so when you were saying how
to discover.
Yes, to be open. Mm-hmm. So I think what Tony was saying, which was, you know, just really just flowed into this, was that he himself was open. He was willing to be with the children in questioning and to be able to say with strength, I don't know. Let's find out. And when you said, what can parents do? There's a wonderful quote. Somebody will call up McGinney who said it. I say it. It's, before I teach others, I must teach myself. So you're saying, what can families do, what parents do, what caregivers do to help children stay creative and, you know, keep the lights burning for creativity? Is that what do you do? I mean, if you are strict, if you are narrow, if you don't wonder, if you don't discuss, if you don't read, if you don't question, then what are you saying to the children? You can say, you go and be creative, and I'm going to be my structured, limited, narrow self. So it's really starting with yourself. What do I wonder about? What do I care about? What do I read? What do I imagine? How do I use my imagination in a non-stressful way? And so I think that's where it really starts, and that climate is what children feel in a home.
Mary in Lancaster, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Yeah, hi. It's been my experience as both a teacher and a substitute. There's just, I guess, a lot of the teachers, because of time constraints or budget problems or whatever, but it seems like there is like a lacking of creativity in the school classroom. I know, like, at one point I was subbed for a second grade class, and they were supposed to learn 5 cents, 10 cents, and 25 cents, you know, the little quarters and dimes. And these kids were crying because they didn't understand it. So what I ended up doing is we got the Play-Doh out, and we played McDonald's. And the kids, everybody got a chance to make change for the food and all that. Boy, they loved that. And, you know, so they were actually doing the subtraction and addition, but they were, you know, using manipulatives and actually having fun doing it. A lot of times I ended up subbing kids who had behavior problems, and I had another kid. They could not get this child to write his spelling word. Well, he ended up saying, well, he started doing it with colored pencils. And I was fine with that because the whole goal was to get him to write the words. It didn't matter what color they were. Mm-hmm. But the other teacher came in and frowned on that and didn't want him to use the
teaching in the key of death.
Huh?
Teaching in the key of death.
Well, one of Mimi's books is Teaching in the Key of Life.
Right, right. You know, I mean, to me, it's like the object is whatever the objective is. If it deviates a little bit from what other kids do, as long as that objective's being met, that's the important thing. I had other kids who couldn't really write very well, so we would go over, okay, tell me what you learned from this. You know, and they could explain to me, which met the requirement for what they needed to know. It's just that they couldn't at that time put it down on paper and pen. But again, the idea of taking the test was to determine what it is they learned or retained. As long as they met that, I didn't have a problem with that. But, you know, a lot of school systems, like I'm kind of like, like a rebel or whatever, and they don't allow that, or, you know, and again, with the no talking, you know, be quiet.
Well, it's kind of interesting, Mary. I mean, is it sometimes, Mim and Michael, I mean, just as simple as letting the kid write with a colored pencil?
Exactly.
I mean, that's not a lot. That doesn't require a lot of extra funding or anything.
This is exactly going into adding stress that's unnecessary to the life of the classroom. Why would you? And given multiple intelligences that we all learn in different ways and we all have different strengths, why not honor some of the ways some of the kids will express themselves? They may learn something perfectly, but they can give it to you the way you, in a limited way, you demand. Those kids who can do it that way are your honor students, and they're great. And the other kids feel like failures, and they close up. So I think the colored pencils is wonderful.
Well, there are a couple. I mean, I think there are two points, and we've all acknowledged them. Is that if we ask teachers to do more and more, to take more kids into their classroom, you know, the time available to say I'm going to help this child express an outcome in an alternative manner, it's the same me trying to do that. The idea of colored pencils intrinsically, not bad, but once again, great. But what that could be, if you're a confident teacher who is able to see all these things happening at once, knows that the progress is being made, that those multiple ways of approaching things are all pretty much in check, fine. But I can see for some people that that's just one more thing that I have to keep track of, or that's an exception. It's a, you know, and what if
and
that
if
leads
I do for
to something
you,
else?
Everyone's going to want to use colored pencils. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the one thing that I think of all the time is, and you asked, what can parents do to try to keep this creativity in their kids, and what could they do proactively and in a participatory manner? And Mimi alluded to this as well, is to take the approach that rather than expedience, rather than, I know, and then just letting that roll out. Challenge kids to not know. Challenge kids to say, okay, that was your first idea or answer or concept. Let's take today and come up with 3 or 4 or 10 others. Let's just make a list of options that you might do. So, yep, you wanted to write about the kangaroo, but probably everybody else in the class is going to write about the kangaroo too. What's another animal that, and deliberately ask it this way, what's something someone else isn't going to pick? What's something you can do that no one else might have thought of? And the result is, and here's what addresses so much of the other issue, you get kids who are interested in pursuing that. They didn't pick the first thing that they didn't really care about anyway. It just was the first thing, and at least they had something, as opposed to the kid next to them that has a piece of paper that's blank and doesn't have something. But you would then have, let's say there are 25 kids in the class, each one, and you've facilitated this, or with your kid at home, you've encouraged this, you have different ideas that kids are motivated to pursue. So when it's time to do the research or the revision or the presentation, reading it aloud, sharing it, you have kids that are proud. They have a part of their identity wrapped in this. Other kids are listening. You don't have the breakdown of discipline because, yeah, I wrote about the kangaroo too. The kangaroo is a big, you know, so all of those ways enliven and make learning less rote and more imaginative, more experiential, and more retained.
You know, when I have my little list of four little nudges for creativity, and the first one is what else? And Michael just did, mm-hmm. you know, illustrated that. But and Mary, the perfect, just two words can help the children in everything. What else can
you
think
of? It's a great rule for journalism.
Oh, for everything.
Making that one final
what
call.
Else?
What's the next question?
Because the minute you say what else, you're thinking of more, right. more options, more mm-hmm. alternatives that you probably would not have thought of unless you trained yourself. It's a way of thinking. And I think it's a great way of thinking because, as you said, you come up with ideas that are original, unexpected, surprising, delightful.
Mary, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
Voter ID laws have cropped up in many states as the 2012 election approaches. Do they suppress votes or prevent fraud? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Nate Persily, a professor of law and political science at Columbia University, and with State Representative Daryl Metcalf, who sponsored Pennsylvania's voter ID law. It went into effect this year, but is under legal challenge. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow morning at 10, and a discussion of the gap year trend in higher education today. That discussion tomorrow at 10 during All Sides with Ann Fisher. And deep in the rainforest, veterinarians and caregivers have a massive and emotional task ahead of them, rescuing and nursing the jungle's most appealing and most vulnerable animals back to health. Tonight on WOSU-TV, learn about approximately 600 orangutans that are being cared for day and night in Borneo. Every day is a challenge for the team as they care for the orphans and deal with life in a rainforest hospital. Watch Orangutan Diary tonight at 8 on WOSU-TV. Sunshine today, a high of 82. Clear skies tonight, a low of 61. More sunshine and warmer on Thursday with a high of 90. And then showers and thunderstorms likely Thursday night, a low of 67. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about creativity today. School starts in a week or two or three, depending on where you live. But creativity should always be. Sometimes we don't have as much time with it. However, once we start school, once our children start school, if you have an idea about how to keep it in your life, give us a call, 614-292-8513, and talk about it with our guests. Michael Rosen, writer, editor, illustrator. We've been talking about his new book, Sailing the Unknown, Around the World with Captain Cook. Also with us, Mimi Chenfeld, author and educator. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And Vanessa in Columbus. Welcome to the show, Vanessa.
Hi. Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome. Hi, Vanessa.
What a great conversation to have. You know, my daughter starts school Monday, which is so early. I'm just like, I can't believe that the summer has gone by. But just to give you a little history about her, my husband and I, who are older, adopted her from China when she was just 9 months old. And so, you know, we only had so much information. And what we wanted for her was to have an opportunity for education and art, where my husband is a pretty well-known musician and I'm in the entertainment industry and in a music school. So that's all we've ever offered her. She's six and just turned six, and she is all ate up with books. And her most favorite series of books are these Geronimo Stilton books, which are, oh my God, they're wonderful. That Geronimo Stilton is a mouse, and he's this adventurer, and the color plates on the books and the way the pages feel, I think is what really got her. She was the age range is like from 6 to 12, and they're 300 page books. So to see my little 6-year-old walking around the house with this 300 page book and her nose buried in it, and she'll stop and she'll go, "You're not going to believe the adventure that they're on." And she's, but the colors and the illustrations and the way that the writer just captured her attention. And she was reading before these, but this series of books has really moved her to a new place in her choice of books, and we could not be more thrilled. So I know that everybody, you know, parents differently, and because there was a lot of paperwork and interviews with adoption agencies and what have you. You kind of have to present who you are and how you will raise this child.
And really put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, and they, you know, they should do that to 16-year-olds that want to have kids. Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, so that's what, you know, when we talked about it, my husband and I were like, we want to raise this independent daughter, and you know, but what we've offered her are the arts and reading, and she's at art camp this week, but she wanted to bring the Geronimo Stilton book with her instead of doing recess to eat her lunch and finish the end of this, you know,
wow,
the third book in the series, so I couldn't be happier. You know, who knows what's going to happen?
Isn't that what you dream of, really, for a kid to abandon themselves, be swept away, be so taken up by something that the reality, that a new world is open? I mean, we talked about before we went on air the idea that arts aren't exactly any sort of antidote to politics, but they are how we do understand politics, and for your child to be able to have this world, you know, that particular place resonated or fulfilled or excited, exhilarated your child in a way. We want the culture of life to possess things that each kid finds a different book, or maybe it's an activity, it's a place of being in the woods, it's whatever it might be that allows them that same sense of abandon and contentment and self-fulfillment.
Vanessa, it's like she discovered Geronimo. You know, she discovered this whole world and fell in love with it. I like to say falling in love with the passion of, and I think that you just really described it. And that's a gift no matter what's going on in school with her. She's got this reality that's at home that's so nourishing and so stimulating that I think she's sounds like a fabulously lucky and gifted child.
Thanks, Vanessa.
You know, books aren't the only thing that we've offered her. You know, mm-hmm. She has an opportunity to take piano, and she's went to a week of off-Broadway theater camp in New York, which was unbelievable. And, you know, I'm so blessed to be able to, I get to live through her eyes, which is great. Hmm. So, but thank you so much.
All
thank
right.
You.
Thanks,
thank
Vanessa.
You.
Take care. Okay. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
We have an email from Hal. Hal writes, in grandparenthood, as in parenthood, I see my primary role as offering my time and attention to spaces and places where children take me for them to show me what they themselves discover. I am a retired teacher, and I know that in schools, college included, we demand that students learn what teachers already know and create. Children will create their own learning when given time to make their own discoveries, to be with them as they explore and create themselves.
Perfectly stated.
Now, that's great. That's great, Hal. If I can just, I want to just mm-hmm. add on to that last part that I was saying, and I think it was Joseph Brodsky, the Nobel Prize winning poet from the former Soviet Union, who said that the arts are moral insurance, that they're the way that society can ensure that the subtlety of our civilization is acknowledged, that it is not rote, it is not standard. We are not all able to respond the same way to the same things, which in some ways politics has to say, generally speaking, this is in everyone's best interest, or something like that. Whereas the arts is trying to say, you know, everyone isn't that. Something very simple, you know, we see something like there's a flood. Okay, we saw there's a flood. We know what floods are. But when you tell the story of one experience in that given flood, I don't want to say that's the artistic thing. It's just simply zooming in, finding that detail, listening to the narrative. You understand the implication of flood in a way that's more than just $600 million or the deficit, you know. So that's...
Well, this is why one person's story can reflect, you know, you're talking about like Anne Frank's diary. Mm-hmm. You know, you have 13 million people who, you know, were murdered in World War II by the Nazis. And one person's story, you can't conceive of millions and millions, but you can conceive of one child's story or one person's experience with a flood. I mean, if you just saw the mm-hmm. movie, what was the movie of the wild, Beasts of the Wild, you know,
Beasts of the Southern Wild. Thank you, Amy.
I'm really good at quoting. That's why I use puppets. But I mean, it's one child story, and that's
that movie.
It was a very touching movie. Did you see it?
No, I have not seen it.
It's a child story, and she's an amazing little 6-year old.
And she was just kind of scooped up out of anonymity, apparently.
I wanted to say one more thing to Hal about what his statement. I think his description of his relationship with the grandchildren is just so perfect. And it's kind of going along with Tony in that he's honoring the kids taking him, you know, and he's not just saying, I'm your grandfather and this is what we're doing, but he's willing to be with them, walk with them, and explore with them. And that's what we're talking about with how you can keep the creativity going. First with yourself, are you open? Are you willing? And it takes courage. You know, to Michael's description of imagining takes a lot of courage because you're going into waters that are uncharted waters and there's no right or wrong yet.
And, you know, I wanted to get to a call that we have because I think it might I'm curious to hear what Aubrey has to say. She is an elementary school teacher and she says her students have issues with creativity. Hi, Aubrey. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Because I'm wondering, are kids afraid to be creative now?
They are. I have many students that when we give them an opportunity to be creative, they have a very difficult time stepping into that because it's now out of their comfort zone. And unfortunately, because of, you know, lack of funding and budget cuts and things like that, the students aren't given the opportunity as much to be creative. You know, they don't have as many art classes, as many music classes and things like that. So I really want to encourage parents and caregivers to give their children those opportunities outside of the classroom because as an elementary school teacher, I am not able to give them as many of those opportunities as I would have in years past.
I mean, Mimi's entire platform is that you don't need an art class or a music class or a dance class. Intrinsically, you need the curriculum that you have, whether it's history or spelling or math or English, and the arts are a way of appreciating and savoring that.
Listen, you could kill the arts too.
Right.
You have a strict, narrow, grim teacher who teaches art.
Yeah, right. Good point.
And you'll never pick up a colorful pencil.
Hey, Aubrey, hang on, because I want to read this email from Candy and see what you think. She says there's a study that shows the creativity level in kids is amazing when they're in the second grade and is almost all educated out of them by the time they get to high school. My memory is that they gave the second graders a paperclip and they were asked to imagine what uses they could make of it. Second graders came up with about 200 different possibilities. By the time they were 12 or 13 years old, they were down to something like 50 possibilities. Imagine what's left by the time they get to college. In short, the study showed that education pretty much stifled creativity. Yikes.
Well, I wouldn't only call it education. I think the whole culture, which is a testing culture, a standardized culture, an immediate gratification, right and wrong culture. Mm-hmm. The school's a part of a culture that's defining how we learn. And the learning is, in many cases, narrowed.
It's not even what you learn, but how you learn.
Am I right? Am I right?
Aubrey, what do you...
Absolutely. I think that, you know, when we're in college, we're taught about the different, the different kinds of ways that students learn. And we all, as teachers, absolutely agree with that, and we try really hard to do that. And I do think that because of a lot of the testing responsibilities that we have, that many teachers do struggle with being able to allow the students to be creative. Not to say that we don't, and I think we try really hard to allow the students to be creative, but now, like you said, in second grade, they are really creative, and then I'm a third grade teacher, and as you go into third grade, we have many, many, many tests that we have to give the students.
And
our pay can be based on how those kids do on those tests. So I think it's really important to be inquiry-based. You know, you ask the kids questions, and there's so many possibilities, and help them to, you know, guide them into different ways of thinking.
When you mentioned the pay thing, it made me think of, wouldn't it be interesting if we paid teachers or gave them bonuses for how many ways a child could think of to use a paperclip? And the more ideas they had.
That's great.
Now, Aubrey, you're sitting here. I mean, Mimi, both of us do teacher training and workshops all around. We don't want to be glib to say, here's the simple thing that you do that will change everything. But I do think there are a couple things that you might do or that teachers might do that isn't the same thing as how do I get the arts or creativity as a separate unit. But is that environment itself, does it foster in every single moment a chance for kids to make not the first decision, but an alternative one, to be playful, to zoom in. I mean, we let kids be so expedient about things. If you said, what's your favorite food? A kid will say pizza, and that could be it. But I'm not saying this is creative. But you could say, what
else?
What size? Where do you get it? What do you have on it? Do you like the crispy part? Do you like it thick? And train the kids that every response they make, they know, is zoomed in, it's detailed. And that, I think, promotes that same sense of I'm probing, I'm being more me than just Family Feud participant.
I call it aerobics for the mind.
Oh, yes. Something I have in my class is a picture of a cup with a ball on the top and a cup with a ball on the bottom. And we talk about, are you doing higher level thinking when you answer this question, or are you just scraping the surface?
That's excellent.
We talk about that a lot. Can you give me more? Can you go deeper into this? And the kids at first have a very difficult time doing that because many of the ways that we teach is, here's the question, here's the answer. And the kids have a hard time going deeper. They want me to give them the answer.
Well, they're rewarded for getting the right answer quickly.
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
But you're modeling something very beautiful and more rich, Aubrey, so applaud that.
You know, this reminds me of a third grade teacher, who Mrs. Smith, and she had her third graders send a letter to second graders who were coming into her class for the following year. And she read some of the letters, and one of the letters to a little second grader was, "Beware, Mrs. Smith sings and dances the spelling words."
Aubrey, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much.
Take care and have a great school year. We're just about out of time. I want to thank my wonderful guest. I know.
No,
this
we've
always
just started.
Happens.
We just
I know.
Started.
So we'll have you back again.
Oh.
Okay. Mimi Chenfeld, she is author and educator extraordinaire. Thanks, Mimi, for joining us again.
Anne. Thank you, dear.
And also Michael Rosen, writer, editor, illustrator. His newest book, Sailing the Unknown, Around the World with Captain Cook. Michael, thanks for joining us again. We really appreciate it.
Thanks to you and your community of good people.
And thanks to the All Sides staff. The All Sides staff includes associate producer Amy Jurovich, All Sides intern Corinne Gleckler, All Sides volunteer Andrew Sweet, with video production by Rich and Amber Karsmiski. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks to everybody for all you do. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.